From New York City, the world-famous Comedy Cellar presents Live from America Podcast. Live from America Podcast. With Noam Dorman and Hatem Gabber. Live from America Podcast. Where the top experts in the world and the best comics in the nation get together weekly to discuss today's issues as they cover news, culture, politics, comedy, and more with an equal part of knowledge and comedy. And now, here are your hosts, Hatem Gabber and Noam Dorman.
Hey, welcome to Live from America Podcast. Hatem here, alongside me, Noam Dorman, one and only owner of the Comedy Cellar. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, hello.
And the one and only regular here, comedian and good friend, Bushwick Bears, Boris Hyken.
Hello, hello. Hey, guys. Good to see you.
For the first time here, not the first time with my shows, we did a show, The Wrong Take, a couple of weeks ago, and he's amazing. Comedian and former prosecutor and left it for comedy, JL Covain. Hey, man.
Hello, nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
And by the way, if you don't know JL, like during the pandemic, you blew up, like millions of views, millions of followers. He does one of the best impressions about President Trump, and he's like, all the, like, dude, you went crazy, like literally millions. Like,
yeah, no, it was great.
You're old Trump.
Yeah, it's I do, but it's good because I've been brought down to earth again. So, you know, fortunately, the algorithm has made me humble again.
See what happens in 2024. You might be back, JL.
That's right.
So I was discussing with Noam before that he's famous now more than he is. He made some memes in the internet. I don't know if you guys know about it. Mm-hmm. So the good news, now that it's open, there's a new addition to the Comedy Cellar. Noam got the McDonald's next door. You know the McDonald's at West 4th?
Yeah.
West 3rd.
And he's going to turn it into a theater. Ta-da! Do you want to share the name again?
No, I don't want to talk about it.
I want to. Just the name.
No, let's talk about something else. Go.
Damn. He like... blood, like he's not.
I couldn't tell if you were setting up a joke or if you were.
No.
It's true.
He didn't warn me. Yeah, we're going to open a new McDonald's, a new comedy cellar.
New comedy cellar in the McDonald's, but you know. Anyway, congrats, and I'm very happy for him. He usually stressed about this, but it just like means. Sometimes I think it means more to me than him. Anyway, I'm not sure why. But it does. So yeah. So let's talk about this week. It's crazy. Do you guys see the TikTok hearing on the Congress thing?
I saw clips on TikTok.
Yeah, me too. This is how we all get our information about that. So what's your thoughts on that? Because it was pretty funny. Let's go with JL since it's first time here.
Oh sure, thank you. Yeah, I think it's kind of. That happened in the 80s, if there was some sort of app that you know, the Soviet Union was potentially spying on America, you know, Ronald Reagan would have banned it and a majority of the country would have been like, absolutely. And now we're just like, yeah, if China's spying on us, I really like TikTok though. So, you know, so what? I think the average person's opinion on this is like, who, I don't really care. I give my information out to everybody every day now. So,
but I don't think this specific hearing, I think they did a good angle because it's not about, you know, sharing information anymore. It's specifically about kids' security.
Oh, sure. And I think, you know.
I know I don't care about kids, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. I honestly think that whatever the phrase is, the horse has left the barn on that. I mean, cell phones, social media apps. I don't know that TikTok, I think, right, like you said, they're using that angle. But their concern is still just about Chinese spying. They're trying to get their way in by saying, what about protecting kids? But if protecting kids from self-harm and from, you know, self-hate spirals via the algorithms, then all social media should be on the chopping block, because I don't see how Instagram or Facebook are doing much less to, or much more to protect kids.
Gotcha. So. Boris, what do you think?
Well, there's one difference for sure. I have mixed feelings on this. On the one hand, so many of these clips I saw are legitimately embarrassing clips of like representatives grilling the guy. But people commenting, it's like they've never seen one of these hearings before, because every time it's clear that these are people who like don't know basic tenets of the internet and are asking ridiculous questions, and it looks dumb. But it's like, if you've seen these hearings before, it's this every time. Anytime there's a hearing in the tech industry, it's like really cringeworthy questions, and they're interrupting and talking over the guy. So a lot of people are defending the China guy, who's actually from Singapore, as I saw in one of the clips.
Did you just say China guy?
China guy, yeah. But the big difference I'd see between Facebook and these is that, like, and I don't necessarily think this justifies it, but they're literally, those algorithms function like differently in America than they do in China. They're legitimately promoting stuff that turns our kids into imbeciles and adults, and they're promoting like videos about math and shit in their own country. So they are using this, like, it is integrated with the CCP the way that they talk about it in the hearings. I just don't know that necessarily that in itself justifies banning it, because, you know, people in America, we are free to do that. And it sucks that our own freedom is being sort of used against us in a way that might make our kids stupider. But if those algorithms are promoting dumb shit and we are consensually watching the dumb shit and responding to it, I don't know if that justifies the federal government banning the app. However, the Chinese government using information and things like that, like, people are falsely making equivalencies between Facebook and between Instagram, and there are some equivalencies, but the difference is that they are not directly manipulated and potentially weaponized by the Chinese government.
Yeah, why we're not having a balloon hearing? Why just TikTok? No, what's your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. My thoughts are,
I guess there's two different angles. One, what do you think of the hearing? And what do you think of as a parent of a TikTok itself?
This is what I think. If I examine my feelings, I'm hoping they ban TikTok. And that's probably a good evidence of why we should have a First Amendment in this country, because there's no good reason I feel that way. It's like I'm sick of the Chinese and I'm mad about COVID and, you know, they're our enemy and ban TikTok. But in reality, why should they ban TikTok? I mean, what sensitive information are they getting? Your email address and your phone number? I don't even know if they get your phone number. The most banal information that every site you interact with in the world has. As far as promoting math videos at home, sure, they're a dictatorship. I mean, that's 1984. They can have a Big Brother on TikTok over there. And that to me is not a sign that Chinese are superior. Yes, it'd be nice if we could hit the sweet spot. It'd be nice if our kids did more math, but in general, we're a free country and they're not. And so of course they're not going to let their kids or their adults see what our adults and children see on these things. I haven't yet heard what it is. The worst case scenario of Chinese gathering information is, what are they spying on? If I could hear it, I'd say, yeah, that makes sense. Ban TikTok or, I mean, these apps are not totally impregnable, are they? I mean, we have some idea of what they're gathering and how they work. They can be reverse engineered in some way. And then at the same time, lab leaks seems pretty plausible, and we're grilling them about TikTok.
Yeah, because it's not a government, really. But what's your thought on, like,
what? Because what?
Because it's not a government. The guy.
What's not a government?
The guy is not, you know, representative of a government, you know?
Everything in China represents the government.
Well, he's from Singapore. Oh, well.
No, TikTok's a Chinese company.
Because they answer to ByteDance. I think that's the connection. ByteDance is a Chinese company. So there's basically, he's saying, in the hearing, he seems sort of evasive, not wanting to, like, blatantly just say, we don't report to China, because I don't think he could say that in good conscience. But he was sort of like, well, I don't do this and I don't know about all this to best of my knowledge. But like the suspicion is that ByteDance actually have to report to China certain things. I thought it was going to stop at like TikTok being banned from sort of government phones, which makes sense to me. Like if these are people with actual important stuff on their phone that may have permissions, but the everyday person, I don't, like Noam said, I think, It's you know, what is the average person giving to them that other social media companies aren't getting that makes TikTok
or my gym.
TikTok being super popular?
Yeah, my gym has all the information too.
I want to say, I find it very unlikely that the app is in a software way stealing information from phones. I don't think you could count on that not being caught. I mean, we have pretty good computer science technology. We'd catch that. Yeah, but as a general rule, government phones probably shouldn't have anything except the few apps that you need for your government to do your government business. As far as the effect on kids, you asked. I mean, my daughter watches TikTok. The most recent data that I've seen actually is poured cold water on the fact that these apps are really, that screen time and all this stuff is actually bad for kids. Every bad effect correlates to the quality of the home, how many books on the shelves, all these things. There was an article just today. Pouring cold water on the idea that Facebook is bad for kids, or that Facebook even is causing depression. A lot of these things that we've been taking as assumptions are being taken. There's another look being taken at them. But in the end, you have to raise your kids.
But that's not a popular take these days, right? Because that's not just social media. Then that logic spills out to like bad schools, right? Kids who go to schools that are like considered underfunding or whatever in New York, if they have parents that push them in the home to study, they tend to do well in those as well. That's just not a popular take these days because people don't really want to.
Right. But of course, it's never been a popular take. And that's why but I think that I've always felt it's obviously true that no amount, we're getting off the subject, but no amount of money, no amount of intervention, no amount of government protecting you from apps is going to help your child if you don't raise them in the proper atmosphere and home. I mean, the analogy I made is that people of my father's generation, if you imagine the schools that they went to, often one room schoolhouses, but even, somewhat divided, few books, no whiteboards, no computers, no nothing, right? Just old fashioned textbooks and a teacher. Probably no air conditioning. I'm sure there was no air conditioning. So if you imagine those school conditions today, people would say, "What are you crazy? Kids will never learn. Like, you can't, how do you expect kids to learn that way?" But of course, that generation had better scores than our generation.
But so it's different, or a different style of life then.
No, it's not. The point is that there's nothing about that stuff that is correlated in any logical way with kids learning their math, reading and writing better. How do they learn their reading better? They have to read more. How do they learn their writing better? They have to write more. How do they do their math better? They have to do more math. And that's it. There's no magic words coming out of the teacher's mouth. There's no fancy computers that's going to do it. There's no fancy whiteboard. None of it matters. And we're wasting our time thinking that it does. I have three kids. I know I've had one kid that was doing badly in school. There is nothing that the government or the teachers could have done to turn that kid around. I had to sit that kid down every day and make sure, spoon feed them to get them to do their schoolwork.
I like to use gender neutral pronouns
if that kid of mine was in a school that had like half the funding of they would say, "Oh, you see, this is the funding of the school," but it wouldn't make it true.
But on the other argument, Norm, I want to go back to TikTok, but just for that, because yeah, I agree with you that it doesn't, but on, if the school have a lot of funding, like say, if you go to Dalton, if you go to, that's a whole different level of education, you will become very good,
So no, yeah, it's not true. It's not true. Look, we know this isn't true. We know that some of the poorest neighborhoods in New York are these Asian neighborhoods where the parents don't even speak English. And their kids are getting the highest SATs in the country.
But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the difference that money can bring in the school system for specific schools.
These are rich, successful parents.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not correlation. The school.
Right. One of the studies that's similar to what you're saying. I read, we were talking about introducing screen time and stuff to our daughter, and there's good analysis of it. Emily Oster has all these good, like, children's data analysis. And it's basically like the parents that don't give as much screen time. It's not the screen time. It's the fact that those parents are doing a bunch of other things that are correlated with parents that just don't let a TV raise their kid.
Listen, Boris, I was in the altar last night and my middle child, who's like kind of the smartest one, he was rattling off all these statistics. He was using words like fluctuation and viscosity and all this stuff. He's nine.
Many?
You're gonna define those for Hatem.
What?
Define those for Hatem.
Yeah. And I kept saying, where'd you get that from? He goes, YouTube. I said, where'd you get that from? He goes, YouTube. Like he's like everything. So, you know, but what he happens to be watching on YouTube is quite different than what his older sister is watching on YouTube. He's a smart boy, and he's learning a shit ton on YouTube because he has an intellectual interest in things. So it's not screen time.
I tell you a funny story about his middle kid, since he's not saying names. I was playing with him soccer, and I did a drill.
I said it's Manny, yeah.
Oh, so Manny. So I was like, Manny, this is a drill for soccer. I want you to do this. And I want you to do it six times, and you only have you have 1 minute, and I want you to do it six times. Got it? It's like 10 seconds a lap. I was like, no. I said, 60 minutes, six times. It's like, yeah, 10 seconds a lap. I was like, huh? How did you do the math that quick? And I couldn't figure out that he's actually a smart kid. But that's just, you know, that's...
Yeah, but clearly they didn't have enough fun. Clearly they didn't have enough funding in your schools, Hatem.
but here's the thing, what I want to say is like TikTok, yes, you can control the screen time. You can control all that. But what you cannot control is their friends' screen time and talk and stuff like that. Because, you know, I'm involved around, you know, a lot of, you know, with all my other work and projects. Like I see a lot of kids. I see how they act outside, away from parents or whatever. Their friends can be like, hey, there's a challenge to do this dance, or there's a chance to do this and this, you know. So I agree actually with the Congress with one thing, one question that they ask them, which is like, it's banned, the under 13 experience is banned in China and Asia. Why is it not banned here? And he said, this is the country's law. Like, it's under 13 is banned over there, but it's not here. So
why all of a sudden are we looking at Asian authoritarian principles and saying, why don't we have it here? There's no reason to think that China is better because they're banning it under 13. I mean, maybe it is, but
not all, I'm not saying China. I'm saying the rest of the world under 13, most of, except the US and parts of Europe, like they allow the under 13 experience.
Right. But there's no, I like, all right, whatever.
What do you think?
We were doing very badly in school before TikTok.
I don't think the main thing
this has become a scapegoat in a way.
Like, yeah, but I don't think it's about school. I think it's about...
our under 13-year-old kids were a national shame. The condition, the way many of them were living and learning and all of that stuff, all the vital signs of a big segment of our under 13-year-old children in this country. It's a national shame. This was bad prior to TikTok. And I think there's a real danger here in making TikTok a lightning rod here and pretending that, oh, if it weren't for TikTok, these kids would be doing better. It's almost a way of taking the focus off ourselves and the horrible way that we're tending to our own children in this country. The problem is not TikTok. The problem is the tending.
And there will always be
unnutritious things for our children to be doing with their time.
You know,
if TikTok is out of the way, something else bad for them will...
But just to clear something before Boris goes.
Look, hold on, maybe get that. Look how fat our kids are compared to the rest of the world. Look how fat they are. Is that because we have food in this country? It's because our parents let our kids eat crap, where other cultures don't let their kids eat crap.
That's why I like what you're doing, taking one McDonald's out at a time.
I'm
thinking that one.
Is there anything wrong with that analogy? Like, it's somewhere else in the world, they don't let their kids eat this crap.
Yeah, but just to clear before...
Ban the crap.
The TikTok, I'm not worried about the school. As you guys drafted the conversation into school, but it's not what I was talking more about, you know, the sexual content of it, you know, the reveal, that all these things. This is what I'm talking about. The inside, oh, I'm not beautiful enough. I'm not, you know, this is what I'm drafting towards, not technically the school at all. So, boys, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if they don't ban TikTok, this whole process has been really great marketing for TikTok. They must have gained at least a few users just in the course of this conversation. Also, the banning the food thing is a similar authoritarian impulse as banning TikTok, isn't it? There's part of the problem is that the food stuff, I've read a bunch of like Michael Pollan and all these different books on it. It's also that like, originally we did a lot of like government guidance on food that was corrupted by the sugar industry and a lot of stuff like that, where the focus was on the wrong things, and we would promote like, you know, Coca-Cola and all this kind of bullshit while pretending to have a balanced diet. And anyway, not to get on too much of a tangent, but I generally agree we probably shouldn't ban TikTok. But there's like also a self-fulfilling prophecy here, where I think the impulse, because this is almost apolitical, right? It's the left and the right are sort of aligned in a lot of the anti-TikTok and now anti-China animus. And there might be sort of a circular, this might be more complicated than it seems, because I think a lot of that mentality is also part of a process that could be in InfoWar that China's fighting as well, as the feeding into American ideas of, you know, more government restrictions here, or just in general, like kind of corrupting what our normal principles are. That's, you know, TikTok might be promoting that. Not like factually they are, but like a lot of the complexities around it are also, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen these like demoralization talks that former KGB agents give from Russia and stuff, but a lot of the process I'm seeing, you know, creating an equivalency between the US and China, which is something I've seen people on the far left do. Now I'm seeing people on the far right do the same with the US and Russia. And like a lot of these things are generational, take a long time to get Americans to think in that sort of way.
All right. JL, you have any final thoughts on TikTok, and then we'll move to...
Well, just the one thing you'd said about people's friends, I think when you talk about parental control and parents taking the reins, you know, my brother, I have two nephews, and my brother and his wife were very sort of like, you know, we don't want our kid to have a cell phone too early. We want to restrict how much he gets on social media. But what happens is, it seems that in your friend's peer group, you can only be as good a parent as the worst parents of your friend, of your kid's friends. So like,
absolutely.
Once one parent goes, hey, at 10, I'm giving Timmy a cell phone. And maybe you say, hold, you go, well, we don't think it's right for you. But by the time my nephew was like 12, he was like the only friend in his group without a cell phone. And then all of a sudden he's just like, I can't, they're cutting me out, because now they literally communicate only that way, or primarily that way, when we're not in school, so that he would be like the last to hear, or then it'd be somebody I have to remember to call him. And I think he honestly, this, you know, there was a little bit of teen resentment when it was like, oh, my parents are the worst, just because they're doing what they believe is sort of the correct thing to do.
And I know some kids that have the same thing, and then they will have TikTok accounts and their friend's phone. They will have everything, and they will go there and use their phone as much as possible during school.
Anyway. There are bad effects of these phones that I won't deny. For instance, and I don't see any way around this, when I'm living in the same town I grew up in. When I was the same age as my kids, the streets were filled with kids outside playing. And something has changed in terms of these things, where now they play video games. When video games and all stuff didn't exist, they preferred to play outdoors. Though that can't be good. And there's no way to just send your kid out by himself to play. As you say, you know, there has to be a critical mass of kids, and that doesn't exist. So this is just the way the world has changed. I don't think there's any going back from that. Yeah. But there are many tools out there.
Video games used to be, sorry, but I was just going to say, video games used to be a little social. Like my friends would come over to play video games.
Yeah.
Now every kid is in their own room, not even leaving. They have a headset. So they like, they're playing with their friends, but you're not even having, in some cases, like.
Yeah. See, when I grew up in the Middle East, video games were live in the street.
Yeah.
Nothing like
that. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Your point's well taken. Even the video games are withdrawing more, and then there'll be VR. But, having said that, there are very good tools for parents to monitor their cell phone use of the kid. My daughter's on lockdown. She gets 2 hours a day. It's automatic. I can monitor exactly how many minutes on each app she uses. Certain apps are always open, like the phone and messaging. I allow her 24 hours because, you know, some emergency or kids want to get in touch with her. But YouTube and that other stuff, she runs out. And then She'll ask me, can I extend it for her? And I will. She calls me all hours of the night. She knows anywhere I am in the world. Literally, I was somewhere in Europe or something. What is it? Can you extend my cell phone? I'm like, all right, you know.
That's so cool.
How long? So there are ways to do these things. And, you know, I believe our kids are going to very much be who they were going to be anyway. I'm not that worried about this stuff. As a matter of fact, I think the athleticism thing and the weight gain, consequential weight gain of not being as active, that may be much more worrisome than this stuff that we're focusing on, in my opinion. They learn a lot from screens, you know? You're not supposed to say it, but they learn a hell of a lot from screens. Some of the stuff that my kid watches that has millions of views, like this guy who does film theory. I'd love to get him on as a guest, Hatem, by the way. This guy does film theory videos and
I'll reach out to the Congress.
This guy on YouTube. He's a YouTuber, film theory, food theory. My 5-year-old watches this guy. It's amazing what he's learning. And even Minecraft and stuff like that. This stuff is quite educational to them. It's not all bad at all.
Yeah, I think a lot of stuff is good. All right, let's move on to Trump's first. There you go, JL, your territory. His first appearance for his first campaign. He said in the beginning, you know, they're not coming after me, they're coming after you. JL, you want to say it?
They're not coming after me. They're coming after you. They want to get after you. They hate white people. They hate people like us. They just come after me because I'm so great, but they want to go after you, you white trash losers who support me. That's who they really want to get. That's who they're going to get.
That's awesome. So that's what they say, is they're not coming after me. They're coming after you, and I'm standing in the way eventually. I won't have not stand in the way because the 20. But he did not say that, you know, the election was rigged for the first time. He said that he just got more votes. So what's your thoughts on the first tour? Here it comes.
I can't believe that we're going through this again. That, like, because what he's mastered, I think, is he is sort of like a Republican dream of Jesus Christ. Like, he's always talking about how victimized, he's the martyr, but he's also the toughest, strongest, richest, baddest dude on the planet at the same time. And I feel like that's the dance that the MAGA crowd really indulges in, which is like, nobody's more under attack than us, but also nobody kicks more ass than us. It's like doesn't really kind of mesh, but they've managed to sort of have that, ignore that cognitive dissonance and have it like be both things at the same time. Like, we're the best Americans, but because we're so great and strong, that's why we're being attacked so much and why we're the biggest victims.
Boris, what do you think?
Well, I'm not going to pretend to have any predictive abilities on this, but there is a weird thing that's happening. And this sort of worked for them in the midterms, which is where, like, during the midterms, you had a bunch of Democratic organizations that were propping up some of these MAGA candidates because they were easier to beat. And that's sort of what I see Bragg doing with these charges. As the article that you shared, it's like a misdemeanor, basically. And it feels like it might be smarter to just give the guy as little attention as possible at this point. And yet, you know, maybe they're afraid that somebody else like DeSantis or I don't know who else Biden might have trouble with. So I don't know if they're playing with fire because, you know, I wouldn't have too much hubris. Trump, who the fuck thought 2016 would happen? You know, like, I wouldn't play with fire like that. But at the same time, it sort of worked for them in the midterms. So I don't know if they'll do it again. I could easily see backfiring. There's a lot of catastrophic stuff happening. And people don't like to think in terms of cycles, which is, I think, explains a lot of the financial stuff going on and all these types of things. And so it's very easy to be like, we didn't have a war in Russia during Trump's term. We didn't have a banking crisis during Trump's term. And so, like, for a lot of people that are not trying to think about it in too nuanced terms and you're not trying to use too many words, I wouldn't play with that fire, you know?
And to your point, he said, this is what he said. And then we go to Noam. He's actually said that yesterday. I mean, in the first campaign, he said, I have a good relationship with President Putin, And when I say that he said, when I say that I plan to end it quickly, I settle it within 24 hours. I mean, that's a strong message, you know? Like, I'll end the war in 24 hours. I mean, people can be like, some people are going to believe me. Like, oh, shit. And we've been suffering with this war.
Can someone? Can someone please?
Yeah. I'll end the war and Putin will pay for it.
Yeah.
What's the question? I forget the question.
So the question is, what's your thoughts on Trump coming back? Like, a lot of people said that, you know, his first campaign, he starts saying stuff like that, he's selling himself a new, thousands of people showed up. So a lot of people say he's not going to do that, but now he's starting very good. So what's your thoughts on him starting the campaign and saying, you know, he can end the war in 24 hours and, you know, they're not coming after me, coming after you. Like, these messages, do they evaporate as much as the, you know, the first messages that he did back in?
Yeah, my feeling, and I was one of the people who thought Trump was done. I'm less sure now, to be honest. Both because he seems to be not unhinged right now. He's put together a few weeks of unhinged behavior, and DeSantis seems to look more like a panderer. And if you read those responses to Tucker Carlson's question about Ukraine, Russia,
yeah,
Trump's response, I mean, I don't know the proper words to describe it. Trump's response was so much better than DeSantis's in so many ways. You know, people used to make fun of Trump for his fourth grade communication skills, whatever it was. I invite everybody to go back and read Trump's response and DeSantis's response. Trump's response is clear. It's well written. As writing goes, you don't have to go back and reread a sentence, parse it. It just downloads easily into your brain and actually makes perfect sense. Not that you have to agree with it, but it's, you know, internally consistent. It says, Russia is not in our vital interest, or Ukraine is not in our vital interest, but it is in Europe's vital interest, i.e., and Europe is in our vital interest. So we have to be concerned here, but that's why Europe should be paying their fair share of this, because first and foremost, this is Europe's vital interest, not us. So that's his point of view. Trump, DeSantis is all over the place, a lot of comma. You don't really understand what he's saying, but what jumps out is says, we don't want to get involved in a territorial dispute in Ukraine. Territorial dispute. We don't want to get involved in a territorial dispute between the Nazis and the Polish. I mean, you know, it's such a tendentious, stupid way to put it. I lost a lot of confidence in DeSantis. And then I'll add to that mix. And again, I'm not happy about this. I'm just telling it like it is, I think. A lot of Trump's policies, you know, a lot of his instincts are looking pretty good in retrospect. Are we happier with the border now? Have they undone those horrible Trump tax, the horrible Trump tax plan? Have they tried to undo it? No, they only tried to undo the part that cost East Coast liberals more money, the salt taxes. Have they tried to undo the tariffs? No, they haven't. Is it a reasonable question to wonder whether Putin would have invaded Ukraine while Trump was president? Yeah, it's a fucking reasonable question. Yeah, I'll have to admit, I don't know if he would have done that while Trump was president. And here's the big one. We've talked about it before. How about Trump's initial instinct to want to make a deal with Russia in 2016 when everybody called him a spy for even uttering the desire? Well, it would look pretty good right now if we had settled things with Russia back then with some sort of grand deal like Kissinger wanted. This counterfactual is pretty bad. So, you know, and Trump is going to say all these things. Look, put it another way. If Trump had simply conceded defeat on November 30th or something, hey, I want to look into it, give him a few weeks and say, you know what? We looked into it. Joe Biden won fair and square. I congratulate him. I concede defeat. He would be the overwhelming favorite for victory right now. Maybe even a popular vote victory. I mean, this guy... That is the only and there's no getting away from that because he did that. And really, it ought to disqualify him from the presidency in the future. But leaving that aside, in terms of the merits of his presidency, his policies, his blah, 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 he's got a good case to make. It's not ridiculous. Everybody focuses. And but why it's interesting, I'll just, you know, say one more thing. It is interesting to observe that almost nobody really attacks him on his presidency anymore. Nobody really attacks any particular policy. It's all about January 6th and not conceding the election. Maybe that's because that's just so huge. That's the only thing worth attacking him on. But I think in some way also,
I think abortion would be the only other thing that would come up like during a race, if he's the nominee.
Yeah. Okay. So let me answer that too. So, but his presidency, his policies are not really such a target-rich environment. And even abortion hasn't turned out to be, we heard one story of this horrible story of a 10 or 11 year old girl who, you know, has having trouble getting an abortion. We haven't heard a steady stream of these stories. We had Kansas, who you'd think would be, you know, ground zero for pro-life, actually have a referendum to allow abortion.
For sure. I just mean as like a campaign issue, would be powerful to get out the vote against him, because you then remind everybody that he was the one who ushered in the overturning
no question they will. The question is, well, first of all, you can't undo that, but
right. Further will it resonate.
I believe that reporters are going to do a good job of finding stories to highlight the abortion as we get closer to it. Nevertheless, the nightmare scenarios that we were told would soon follow after Roe versus Wade was repealed have not unfolded as we worried. I'm sure there have been some, and those are very, very important. But in general, you know, it's not.
But it's the same thing with moving the embassy to Jerusalem. Like people say, oh, my God, it's got nothing happened. But here's the thing. You know, a lot of people counted Trump out. I don't want him to be president, obviously. But I always say he have a lot of people that, you know, that follow him and they don't even say it. They don't admit it. And some of his messages are, you know, they'll get through. You know, this is some of the things that he said yesterday. You know, some of the messages that he said yesterday that could, or, you know, number of things that he promised. You know, one of them is held China accountable to abort COVID. Or I'm going that. Why is that not a thing right now? You know,
let's take another thing too. Lockdowns. I was very pro lockdown. I locked down before everybody, and there's no. None of the, I mean, everything I'm saying here requires me to admit certain things that I overdid, but.
Well, hold on, Noam. You were pro-lockdown personally, or you were pro-lockdown administrative state doing it on your behalf?
I was pro-lockdown for both initially, and then I thought that they ought to experiment with very, very strict N95 mask rules, because there was data showing how certain neighborhoods had almost no COVID and so. But that may not have been practical. But my only point being that Trump's position on against lockdowns was considered outrageously horrible at the time he was doing them. But in retrospect, many people now are reconsidering. We don't even know anymore. Like I think the smart people now think, well, it's hard to say whether lockdowns helped and what the cost of the lockdowns was, even if it had meant some worse COVID, but quicker COVID. Nobody knows anymore. Nobody knows, because the data is all over the place. So even that becomes harder to nail him on.
Some of these points are bipartisan too.
Yeah.
Like I feel like there's people on the left who would not be against term limits on Congress.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is like, you know, now he's, you know, I feel that the Democrat is doing a lot of stupid mistakes, like trying to prosecute him right now, which we can talk about it later. You know, just bring
it now. Talk about it now.
We're gonna talk about it right after that. But you know, but some of the points that he's making right now, you know, especially to his followers, is gonna be. It's like, see these points on the screen right here. Like these are like some of them like vibrate with his, message. You know, so you know he's not gonna be counted out. So. Another thing before we talk about this is a thing that he said in his campaign is like, if anybody, I don't know if you, I think I sent you the article from Fox News. He blacklisted anybody that's going to work with DeSantis, even if he puts, put out the chairs in the campaign or something like that. What do you think of that move? That's a typical Trump, right?
Well, I think if I may place a bet, if I can find some websites with like who's going to win the GOP nomination,
I'll send you one.
I don't think I don't think DeSantis knows what he's getting into, to be honest. And DeSantis wants to stay out of the race right now. I think like he doesn't want to officially enter because he wants to be, oh, 6 months from now, he'll be like the savior and the fresh candidate. But I think the media and Trump are very doing him a disservice or hurting his campaign by kind of making him an unofficial nominee already. Like he, you know, he's going to be sort of worn out in another 8 months of like, you're just going to, whether he announces or not, you're just going to be like, oh, DeSantis versus Trump. I'm, you know, DeSantis, we've heard all the negatives. He hasn't defended himself enough. And I don't think he realizes that in a debate, the culture around the Republican Party that Trump sort of was the apex or the low point, depending on how you look at it, of like aggressive, simple, forceful. He can't be beat as the Republican Party is constituted right now in a primary, because DeSantis, he will just sit there watching DeSantis and just on a debate stage, he'll call him dumpy. He'll say, listen, short, it's okay. I'm talking.
He called
right
him
now.
Gay at a rally, I think, already.
Right. Oh, no. And he'll talk about his white boots and it will be funny and he'll dehumanize him. And DeSantis doesn't have the tools to win in that kind of a fight. He doesn't have the physical stature. He doesn't have the rhetorical skills. It's going to be a simple, you know, it's going to be a roast battle. And DeSantis will bring, you know, a spoken word show to a roast battle fight, basically, to put in performance terms. So I think Trump is going to win the nomination unless he's in jail. Like, I don't know how he loses right now. The way the Republican Party still operates. So I don't know. That didn't really answer a question, but I just think at this point, DeSantis is he can only lose stature. He's not going to gain support. He's only going to start out kind of even with Trump. And then I think, you know, whether it's nice or right or not, when he looks like he's getting browbeaten by Trump on the debate stage and can't effectively come back, it's over.
I mean, it would be smart for DeSantis if he did not run this time. So if Trump wins, he will be like whatever. And if he loses, he'll be like, you know, he's become the only savior, you know.
No, DeSantis has to run now.
Why now?
Because now is within the afterglow of his significant accomplishments, his huge reelection win, his you know, pretty much good handling of COVID.
But Trump is willing, as he did in like his first attack on DeSantis, he basically laid out a Democrat playbook to attack DeSantis on, which is, I think when you're dealing with somebody like Trump, who really, he just wants to win, ideological consistency or any, it does. So he'll take a DNC playbook to attack DeSantis. And then if he wins, gets it to the general election, he'll flip to just saying like, you know, well, Ron did a good job. You know, we like Ron. Ron, we had a little fight, but he's good. We like what he did in Florida. You know, 2 weeks after saying what he did in Florida was a complete disaster.
Well, yeah. Trump doesn't need to be internally consistent. He's just doing damage. He's doing damage. And you know, he does damage from the point of view of the people who are open to that particular line of attack. So he'll take every line of attack, even if they're contradictory, and the people who respond to that particular line of attack will enjoy that. They don't care that he says the opposite to someone else.
I think DeSantis probably assumed that Trump was out once he started gearing into this, and not just DeSantis, but like, I think at a certain point he started taking on these culture battles in a larger, louder way. And also the media started kind of attacking him, both for good reasons sometimes, but also sometimes just giving him the Trump treatment, where like everything was viewed through this lens, and it kind of, and he didn't really rise to the challenge. You know, a lot, he started really doing some stuff that was just so culture war, you know, battles with and not that all of it was nonsense, but like some of it was definitely nonsense, and was just trying to pander to that crowd, the same as what he did regarding Russia and Ukraine with the territorial dispute wording, which he already walked back. He already did like another interview and just totally like, you know, yes, they were the aggressor, blah, 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 blah. So he's trying to pander to Trump's base with Trump still in the ring. And so that's not going to really.
But imagine this, like in the debate or whatever, you know, DeSantis is there and Trump is going to tell him, you're going to deal with Putin? You're going to end the war? You don't look like you can, you know, it just.
Listen to that voice. Listen to DeSantis's voice. You think Xi is going to respect that? No, he's going to walk away from the meeting. He doesn't want to talk to that. Listen to that voice. It's like sour milk. Like he's, you know, he'll beat him. It will be enjoyable. I hate to say it. Like, I can't wait to see that matchup from an entertainment standpoint. But I just think it's. I think Trump should be the overwhelming favorite.
Like, also, Trump's luck. I mean, Trump was down on the mat to some degree when these classified documents came out. And then
they found a few at Biden's house. Yeah.
Few. They found tons of Biden's house.
But it was like it like nullified the issue. It totally did.
What luck.
Yeah, that's. Well, he's, you know, he is lucky. So Andrew Cuomo was, interviewed and he said, like, he doesn't understand the prosecution. He said, a person breaks the law, I get it. But on the state side, this is a misdemeanor. You know, he's saying that they're giving Trump more than he should. This should, you know, and it's political, which I agree with him. You know, it's political. Nothing. Former
he's
prosecutor,
such an opportunist.
Gail, what do you think?
I think Cuomo kind of reminds me of some comedians who maybe started left wing or centrist, but then hit hard times and then realized there is a lane in the right wing space. So he's like quickly becoming kind of the, hey, you know, the way Bill Maher sometimes gets pointed at by like conservative friends of mine, like, hey, if Bill Maher thinks this, then maybe the left is crazy. I'm like, Bill Maher has been trending centrist for a little while on a lot of issues. But I think Cuomo just sees a lane now of like, you know, the left has rejected me, but now I see myself going on WABC and agreeing that these are left-wing propagandists, because he has an axe to grind against the left wing also. So he picks his spots.
But what he's saying is making sense though, right?
No, I think he is. But on this issue, I don't like seeing it maybe necessarily labeled as a purely political. I mean, of course, it's the president. There, politics has to be part of it. It's kind of impossible to make.
You don't think that? I mean, they ran on this. Of course, it's political.
No, right. But unfortunately, I think Bragg had things to prosecute him on and opted to play it sort of safe. But the timing now. I think he should politically. I think he should let the statute of limitations run on this charge. And I know that will make a lot of people angry. And I don't believe that Trump should be above the law. But I just think you could cause damage to the case, the other cases in the court of public opinion. If like this is the first one, if this was the third one or the fourth one, it wouldn't matter. It'd be fine. I think in terms of politics, it would look. Well, yeah, you know what? He committed a lot of crimes. We're not going to let him get away with one either. But for this to be the sort of first one out of the gate, it isn't great.
Morris, what do you think? You think it's political?
I agree with JL sort of from the opposite side, both on Cuomo and Bill Maher. he's what liberals used to be. but like, I think whether I agree with him or not, it's just cringeworthy, like opportunity. Opportunistic, and that follows another one that he did. I don't know if you saw that Israel video that he did to like Democrats, which was like, why is Cuomo feel the need to be the one to do this? He like did a speech to fellow Democrats about how like you can't support Israel. What did he say? Like you can't be against anti-Semitism and not support Israel, basically. Which there's that argument to be made, but like, why Cuomo? Why now? It just seems like he's trying to like join the Barry Weiss camp or something of like liberal defectors. And to me, it's just like you're not articulate enough to word this in a strong and like good enough way for it to overcome the fact that like why do you feel to be the voice that needs to be speaking up on this? It just feels too much like he's trying to cling on to relevance.
No, I get that. That's one angle of it. You know, why Cuomo's trying to get himself back into, you know, the shape. I get it.
But the word, but the words I would agree with you on as yeah, far as so, what he's saying.
It is political and it's not, you know. Noam, what do you think?
I think the following. As far as Andrew Cuomo goes, being governor for 8 years in New York.
10, right? Wasn't he 10? I think wasn't he in his years? Third term?
Yeah, I guess you're right. 10 years in New York. One would have to assume that he was tempering his message to the left and the far left on a daily basis. And to the extent that now we're hearing it less left wing, it could be pandering in some way, it could be a thing, but it would shock me to find that out of office, Cuomo was saying the same ridiculous things that he was obviously forced to say as governor of New York to keep control of the far left of his party. So I don't know how to separate that out. I think,
but did Cuomo he need to do that? Would he really lose to a Republican if that was the case? Like, who would he be doing that for?
Oh yeah, he I don't, well, would he really lose Republican? It would be a civil war. I mean, look at Joe Biden the same way. Do we really think Joe Biden believes all this crap that he we know that he's a moderate
we
guy.
We know he doesn't because he's backtracked on a lot of
yeah,
it.
But within the party, look at Schumer. Look at Schumer, afraid to say a bad word about Hamas. I mean, obviously, within that party, we know that rightly or wrongly, the old school moderate Democrats do not want to start a civil war with the new guard. So I think that's where Cuomo, to some extent, was coming from when Cuomo made that "See, America never was great" and all that stuff. I mean, that didn't sound like Cuomo anyway. As far as what we were talking about previously about Trump?
Yeah, is it a political question or not?
Oh, I think, first of all, how many millions of dollars do you think has been spent to try to get Trump on legal charges? $100 million? Is that an exaggeration? $50 million? Obviously, this is political. You don't spend $50 million in good faith to catch somebody on legal charges and there's nothing, like you're never able to get it. Obviously, at some point, prosecutors are supposed to decide what to go after based on the prima facie case in front of them. When $50 million worth of prima facie cases don't pan out, something is going wrong with the judgment of the people making these decisions. That we know what that going wrong is. It's they want to get him. It's politics. And that goes back to Russia. But having said that, the weakest of all the charges against Trump is this stupid Stormy Daniels thing. A woman who's not even claiming... It's not like an NDA and after the fact she's trying to get out from under it because he molested her. But this is a woman who had a totally consensual affair with a grown man. And now at a time when he's, you know, becoming more prominent again, is hitting him up for money. And he's trying. And this is a very sympathetic thing. We thought it was terrible that they went after Bill Clinton for actually what would be considered sexual harassment now. How dare they want to? And the same people who were defending Bill Clinton, it's all about sex, are going after Trump for nothing. Number one. Number two, if you were to take their supposed theory to its logical conclusion, what you're saying is that what Trump should have done to pay Stormy Daniels is he should have written a check from Trump, you know, the Trump reelection, the Trump campaign committee, whatever it's called, and actually taken like old ladies' monies, their donations to Trump, and used it to pay his mistress. Is there
and
any
then reported
doubt?
To the FEC, and then, said, yeah. I have made this payment.
Any doubt that Alvin Bragg would not be saying right now, aha, Trump took campaign funds and paid his personal expenses. Are you expect us to believe that paying off a mistress is a campaign expense? This man is a criminal. Of course, that's what they'd be doing. And it's going to help him because even people who hate him are like, yeah, this is kind of ridiculous. What are we doing here? They're so stupid.
Yeah.
Well, I think the timing of this also, it doesn't help. Like, in other words, I think Cy Vance basically just kind of punted on this and was like, I'm not going to run for re-election. You figure this out. Like, even if you thought it was worth something, even if it's just a misdemeanor, but you're like, you know what? We're not going to ignore it now that we see that we believe there is a case for, then it should have been brought 5 years ago. Like, they're trying to get it in because it's the only thing they think they have. To Trump's, I don't know if credit is the right word, but he operates like a slick criminal. Like, He doesn't text. He doesn't email. He speaks in kind of vague, you know, like Michael Cohen, you know me well enough that I just can say something and you know what I want. I don't have to say bribe this woman. But I think, I just think in this case, they're trying to get it under the statute of limitations because they don't have anything else in New York. And Bragg, I think, views this as kind of a failure. There've been criticisms from within his office, from other prosecutors. So like he wants to get something.
Okay, but that's political.
But I think he should drop it. I mean, yeah.
If what you're saying is true, Bragg should be, you know, thrown out of office. And this is, I mean, that this is exactly the opposite of what prosecutors are supposed to do. Let's take a few things here. For instance, Michael Cohen, who we assume knows basically everything there is to know about the last 10 years of Trump activity, or trying to keep himself out of jail with full motivation to exaggerate, to lie, to come up with something to give somebody to allow himself, you know, to be able to trade to keep himself out of prison, could come up with nothing on Trump that was criminal. Nothing, zero. That alone should have been enough. Say, you know what? There's nothing there. If Michael Cohen couldn't come up with it, why would we think we're going to get it? He would be the guy we'd be trying to turn. We turned the greatest witness of all, and we came up empty. This is done. Trump, you, that sounds like it could have been criminal, but apparently there was nothing criminal there. They trying to find, all of a sudden, the liberal America is concerned about banks being defrauded by the people they're lending millions of dollars. So we, on behalf of the banks, Trump misvalued this property to the banks. But of course, we all know that everybody involved in that transaction knows what's going on there. The banks know very well what these properties are worth. Banks do their due diligence. They don't care what Trump fills out in his loan application as to what Trump says the value of some property is on Madison Avenue. And the loan was paid back. It's ridiculous.
But I would say, but on that count, I think that's why you see a lot of people in certain industries avoid politics, because they don't want the further scrutiny. I think Trump, in his sort of arrogance, just figured nobody would, like, in other words, if he had never run for president, like, he would have never really been subjected to the amount of scrutiny that he was. But no. once you do uncover stuff,
I'm going to tell you something, and this is what I really believe to be true. And I had just a little taste of it just in the last few months, because when I was trying to get financing for this real estate thing I went through, the issue of how different banks will value different the same property, how you realize what a thicket it is. Even, you know, even with everybody within everybody playing on the up and up, you go shopping around for the bank that is known to value properties low or known to value properties high. If they value the property high, they'll give you, you know, more of a loan. They value the property low, you can put less. I don't even know what the things are. The fact is, there are so many rules and regulations that nobody in the industry plays it straight. The entire industry is based on how do you get around this, how do you get around that, because the rules are ridiculous. They at the extremes, hopefully, and maybe they don't even do this, they form a backstop which protects us against calamity. But in the intermediate cases, nobody can actually do everything to the letter of these rules. Because my daughter, she wants her cell phone time now. Nobody can. Hold, actually, you know what? You guys go. That could be an important call. Go ahead.
I can add to this, because I do a little bit in real estate also. And the problem is that what is the value of a thing if you have a small enough market and few enough comps? There just is too much of a subjective nature with a lot of these things. And I can only imagine when you're dealing at such higher price points that Trump's dealing at, but even like in Brooklyn, if you look at like a condo or something like that, and there's not a lot of comps around, there's a lot of wiggle room for what you could value a thing at. And one bank might not count renovations inside at all. Another bank might say these are worth this particular amount. So like,
I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, it's just a lot of wiggle room. There's not a definitive.
Oh, sure. And that's what I was saying. Like, what I was trying to say before is, like, I'm not denying that I don't think you see a lot of real estate moguls running for president because the books, you know, you know, Trump was under the, was never going to release his taxes. Like, he kind of knows I have shady stuff. It's not, I'm not saying he was even super out of step with the real estate business. Although I think when you compare how he reflected his value for tax purposes versus like his value for buying properties or whatever.
Don't we all do that?
Yeah.
No.
We don't.
I am. Maybe it's because I'm afraid of being audited, but I actually am. And the fact that I was a prosecutor, my taxes are squeaky clean. I dare any IRS agents listening to come audit me.
Yeah.
audit me, bro.
My feeling about Trump has always been, and so far it hasn't been proved wrong, that he's like most guys in that situation. Well, he'll say to his professionals, what about this? What about that? What are the consequences if they don't allow this? Because rules are, you know, you don't even know half the time what you can get away with. And he'll say, and the accountant will say, well, if you do this, the worst case will be penalties and interest. You do this, blah, blah, blah. And the overriding principle is, but you don't do anything that could put me in jail. And that is, I'm pretty sure, unless he's an idiot, that was the overriding principle that went on in that organization. You push everything a little bit past the limit of what's plausible, but not to the point where I can find my ass in jail. So I always thought it was unlikely to find some smoking gun of outright criminality that could put him in jail. Because why would they do that? They don't need to do that. There's so much gray area in the law. There's so much money already around. And now they're
I would just say, my only thing is that when he was doing that stuff, the one caveat is he just assumed I'm going to be a real estate mogul celebrity. I think if you told him in 2005, hey, you know, you're going to run for president in 11 years or something, I think that would an accountant or a lawyer might say, you're going to be subjected to a higher level of scrutiny than the average real estate mogul. So I don't know if he was maybe guarding himself to that level of protection
But plenty of moguls have found themselves in jail.
Yeah.
Helmsley found their jail. I mean, audits, federal tax audits of a billionaire.
Robert Durst.
These are not minor things. Right. I mean, you don't just count out, oh, it'll be fine. Like, they're not going to look. No, like you're presuming a small guy can kid himself, I'm not going to get audited. Trump knows he's going to get audited. Everybody in that bracket assumes an audit, and they hire professionals.
Right.
And their marching orders are prepare for the audit.
Right.
We know an audit's coming. So, you know, now, of course, having said that, some moguls found themselves in jail. That's evidence of the fact that sometimes they can't control themselves and they still do ridiculous shit. Nevertheless, you would think the likely outcome is that Trump's professionals, and he didn't have just Michael Cohen, he has serious accountants and serious lawyers, that they look at this stuff and they say, no, you're not going to, we won't be able to defend that. This could be criminal. Right. And they don't do that. He's not poor.
But here's my point, just to end this, is like, while they are trying to, you know, prove that he didn't pay this, you know, sex work and all that, and these are the messages he sent in one side. On the other side, he said, I'm going to stop the war in 24 hours. I'm going to do, like, hold the Chinese accountable for the leak lab. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. Look at the difference. So slowly, people are going to try to start to forget what he did, and they're going to lean that way. So we either need to be very clear in the message why he is bad for this country and not go with some bullshit, or he's going to win again. You know, this is how I feel. And 95%, I'm right.
Can I just add the one other weird thing I found about this? I've noticed, including comedians, posting like pictures they got with Stormy Daniels, like as a new like cultural thing, which is just, there's no way she's a good person. You know what I mean? Like, maybe
do you know that Stormy Daniels wanted to do comedy?
No,
she was doing comedy. She lists comedian in her bio, in her Twitter bio. It's one of her many titles.
Yeah. Yeah. I know she wanted to do The Cellar too. That's great.
Oh, I would have loved to put her on.
You want her?
Of course.
Oh, okay. I'll contact. They wanted to, I'll tell you details later. But yeah,
I always found her. I always found her just a stormy sidebar. I always found her description of sex with Trump to be the least empowering thing I've ever heard, which she was like, so then he comes into the room and I was like, oh no, here we go. And I'm not a victim, but we just had sex for 2 minutes. I was like, you could have said no. like it wasn't like he assaulted. He just kind of was like, hey, and she was like, I guess. And I was like, really? Like, I don't even know if I'd call that an affair. That was like you were bored for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
It is interesting that she was, I'm gonna bring up a picture. It's interesting that she was his taste, you know, she's kind of ridiculous looking porn star. I find that interesting. Just like I find it interesting that, according to Michael Cohen, Trump loved Neil Young. Neil Young is Trump's favorite musical artist. Like, it's just, I find that, like, putting together the pieces of Trump's psychology. Neil Young. He loves Neil Young.
And the fact that he doesn't drink or do any drugs. So every decision that he makes is not under the influence.
From the heart.
I mean, if I were Trump, I hope he will say it. He was like, remember when they said I had cognitive decline? Remember when they had articles writing about how I couldn't? Has anybody asked about Joe Biden? it's really the supposedly mature media really embarrassed themselves in the age of Donald Trump. The stuff they went after him for, it's just, yeah, you know, this doesn't change who Trump is. But like, they lost me right and left, and I was always open to it. And they lost me so much that I found myself defensive of him in some weird way, just because it was ridiculous the stuff they were. You had full articles in The Atlantic about how Trump is in cognitive decline, full analyses of his speech patterns from 20 years ago versus today. And now you have a guy, Joe Biden, who I'm not saying is in cognitive decline, but really seems to be a much more logical target for these types of analyses and articles. They don't touch it. They don't come within 20 feet of it. What? How disgusting are they? Like, you're pretending, and you go to sleep thinking I'm an objective journalist. You're not.
I hate to defend Trump, obviously, but I will say this. The two old people that I'm impressed by their energy and clarity are Trump and Bernie Sanders. Like, I hope when I'm 80, I'm like Bernie Sanders, just in terms of like energy and clarity. And Trump, I'll watch him sometimes. And of course, I make fun of him and I'm not a fan, but I'll watch him do like a 90-minute rally. And I'm like, that can exhaust, like a 65-minute set can exhaust me at the right time of day.
And that's what
78-year-old is just on stage, doing his act.
Yeah, he started his campaign. He landed at 5 and did the rally at 5:40 after 40.
How about Fauci? How about Fauci at 83? Yeah. How about Mick Jagger? Biden is on the bottom, I'd say, of the super geriatrics.
Of
prominent public figures that we know of that age. Biden has to be on the bottom of what you would suspect of every category, you know, and nobody talks of, you know, well, the right talks about it, but the people who were so worried about these issues, which is, I'm just being objective, you know, being president of the United States is very important. We have to know that the president is mentally healthy. They never really cared about the mental health of the president. It was another front to open against Trump.
And that was another mistake that they did is, you know, the vice president has become important for the first time in a while, and they made a horrible choice and horrible mistake.
Oh, the worst.
So this is the thing.
He's in worse cognitive decline than he is.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Democrats. Like, everything, like, they're paving the way to Trump. The only thing that can stop Trump, ironically, is the Republican Party with another nominee. But if he wins, I don't see anybody stopping him from the other side. It's just, you know.
I think he can win the presidency again. I think Biden would beat him handily.
Biden?
I agree. Because it's the same. It, only because it's like, I think somebody else would exploit Biden's perceived weaknesses, but Trump doesn't really exploit. Trump doesn't attack Biden's weaknesses. Like, in other words, Biden and Trump will remind you that, like, oh yeah, well, they're both old. Trump doesn't seem as old, but oh right, the reason we elected Biden in the first place, because we really didn't believe Trump could be president anymore. Like, he was he was not the right person anymore, and he hasn't changed that.
But now,
like,
but
he
now
hasn't done anything to change that.
I'm gonna backtrack a little bit because I shouldn't have totally said that. Everything you said, I agree with, and you know, Trump's agenda in 2016, which was pretty powerful. Now it's like, I was robbed, blah blah, is petulant, and you can't pretend that you're going to build the wall anymore, stuff like that. But of course, we just have to always remember that going into 2024, if the economy is in shambles, I mean, we don't really know what the situation is. Yeah, but Trump, you know, that might just be enough to depress turnout. Trump will never win the popular vote, but he could cobble together an electoral college vote again. He could.
Right.
And if God forbid he was smart enough to say, you know what, I'm sorry about, he's not gonna do that. But if you were to indicate in any way that he realizes he lost in 2020, that will allow some people to rationalize a vote for him too.
I could see him not apologizing, but figuring out a way to walk a middle ground where he emphasizes the times that he said be peaceful and blah blah blah, and kind of like, you know, I condemn the people that did this. I'm not going to go into a terrible.
Well, he did. They did kind of say that in his first rally when he said, "I won the popular vote." He didn't say the election was rigged. He said, "I won the popular vote."
Is saying it's rigged,
which is also false, though. I think he's going to have signs saying, you know, they say FDR. Remember FDR? He won 4 elections. Well, this will be, how about my third? I'll be winning a third. Isn't that interesting? Maybe we go for a fourth. I think there's going to be no control. It's going to be, I'm embracing, I never lose. Like, his weakness is honestly an inability to he's like emotionally unable to admit defeat.
That's right.
So it's like, he can't, like, it's his, like, he's got many flaws, but like, as far as getting elected, the inability to ever admit he lost is going to hurt him.
Yep. This is you'd hit on a key point here. And I think many people feel this in their gut. He couldn't admit defeat in 2020. That doesn't mean he wanted to be a dictator. I never thought Trump wanted to suspend democracy. Trump wanted to be, this would be our last election. That's what they would have us believe about Trump. The much more believable Occam's razor explanation is Trump did not want to admit defeat. He wanted to be president for 4 more years. He did not want to end democracy and be the last president of the United States. If he wins in 2024, he's not going to be desiring to be president until he's 100. He wants the ego saying, I came back, I won. He will leave after his next term.
But he will also, I will say this, as somebody who has spent a lot of time trying to think like Trump, I think he will give enough red meat to both his supporters and the media, like bait them with a, what if I ran for it? You think I should we do something about the Constitution? How about we change it? We can do that, right? Let's change. Like, and it's not realistic, but he will say that, and his supporters will cheer, and people will write articles going, is Trump really going to change the Constitution? You know.
But just to recap, if Trump won Go versus Biden, I think Trump will win.
Now, what we don't know yet, and I really love to know this, maybe, is behind closed doors when Sidney Powell and these crazy people were saying all these things about Dominion and blah, blah, blah. Did Trump believe that stuff? Like, was there ever a conversation? I mean, it's likely in some way he did, right?
Because I think he would want to. I think his desire to believe it would be so strong. He would emotionally convince his brain, you know, that does make some sense.
But it wasn't like a mafia meeting where, listen, we know we've made $1 million. We're going to tell them blah, blah, blah. Like, was it a totally cynical enterprise where they know the truth and then they concoct a lie that is a criminal, actually not technically criminal, but you know what I mean? Like a bad faith,
defamatory,
malevolent enterprise, or was this a mass delusion?
I used to watch when my cable station had OAN. I would sometimes just watch OAN because I found it.
You don't have to explain yourself.
Yeah, I love OAN. I'm a huge OAN fan.
I used to watch porn when my cable station had it. I wasn't interested in it, but.
But I flipped on OAN and I saw, this was before Sidney Powell joined his legal team. And I'm watching this woman and I'm going, oh my God, like without knowing anything about her, I'm going, this person's insane. Like I believed that she believed it because I was like, this is a crazy person they found. And a week later, she's standing behind him at like a press conference or with Giuliani or whatever. I'm going, oh my God, she's on his team? Because I just thought it was like they found some random lawyer who was a little off her rocker to like spout some pro-Trump stuff. And then I was like, so I think there were people like Sidney Powell. I think Sidney Powell and Mike Lindell, he's not like an official campaign person. I think those people are like, they believe it. Like, yeah. I don't think that's an act.
I don't know. It's fascinating. I was saying at the time that Trump shops for lawyers like Michael Jackson shopped for plastic surgeons, you know, for doctors like he wants. Yes, Michael, your nose would look better. I knew it. And then you wonder what's in the head of the doctors. I don't know. Like they just probably want the money, but.
Right.
The pay, and you do need these drugs, and you know, and it's something fascinating on a psychological dynamic is going on there. We don't really understand it yet. I'm fascinated by it. If I were making the movie or the screenplay, I don't know how I would write it, but it's really interesting. And it happened. It fucking happened, and it roiled the country. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think it's like his own conspiracy theory. I think when you find somebody who's vulnerable, whether they're vulnerable because of poverty, mental illness, Trump was like ego vulnerable, I think. Yeah. Like he was more susceptible to somebody telling him like, you know, it's far-fetched, but we know you believe you won. And these machines are pretty kooky. So we think these machines may have done it. And he's like in a hypnosis susceptibility, like where it's like, yeah, I knew I didn't lose. And even if it's crazy, what's crazier to me is the idea that I lost. So everything's less crazy than me losing. So Venezuelan-controlled voting machines seems pretty plausible.
Wait, let me add something to that because it is fascinating. We have to end, I know. I know three very smart people that I consider to be quite level-headed and data-driven people who believed this stuff as well. Only, which is to say that
I do
this
as well.
This is a very human weakness. I'm not going to do it now, but I could start spouting out left-wing issues that you'd say, don't they know the data on this? This just isn't true, but everybody believes it. Humans are very, very vulnerable, especially in the dynamic of a crowd, to believing stuff which is demonstrably false. And, so before we curse out Trump too much, which he deserves cursing out, it's just look at our friends who went for this. It's fascinating.
And that's one of the things about, I think the good thing about having Trump and the pandemic is we found out how crazy our friends are, really. You know, but what I was going to say before we end is like, do you guys, he would act a certain way if he lost to the first election to Hillary? Like, how would he act? Because this one is rigged and all that, but we would have seen a different kind of Trump if he lost from Hillary, right?
I don't think so, because I think he thought he was going to, like,
I know.
And I think he was laying the groundwork. He was talking about it being rigged before the election even took place. So I think
he probably would have gone deep state and stuff like that and the swamp, you know.
Or he might have at that point before he tasted the presidency, because let's be honest, being president for 4 years to somebody like Trump, I mean, that is like your ego on the most powerful steroids available on earth. I think he would have parlayed a loss to Hillary into business opportunities. Like he would have monetized that and mobilized. Maybe there was talk that he might try to have a news network. Like maybe he would have parlayed that into sort of a Fox competitor and becoming the Rupert Murdoch, Tucker Carlson hybrid of a new news station. Maybe not, but I think that might've been where his mind was before he got to taste the presidency. But once he got the presidential drug, yeah, that's it. That's the only thing that'll get him high again.
Well, I happen to have found myself through a weird series of coincidences at a dinner table at a restaurant with Michael Cohen. And I have two stories about that. But the answer is yes, you're 100% right. They totally expected to lose, never expected to win. I don't know which one to tell first. I'll tell the first one. I asked Michael Cohen, I said, was there any time in any context, no matter how remotely, that Trump's relationship with Russia in any way affected American policy or would have affected American policy? And he said, no. Just so you know, he said, no. You hear him double talking on that issue on TV from time to time. I asked him twice. No, there was no connection between Russia and anything that Trump was doing. So that's the horse's mouth as far as I'm concerned. Number one. Number two, he told a funny story where he said that Trump expected to lose. But then when he won, they had found out that Hillary had spent, I think, $100,000, maybe even $1 million on fireworks in preparation for their inaugural celebration. And Trump, I wish I had your ability to imitate him, but Cohen imitates him really well. And Trump tells Cohen, go over there and offer them $5,000. Offer them $5,000 for fireworks. And he meant it. So Cohen had to go there. You got all these fireworks and $1 million. You know, you can't use them now. We'll give you $5,000 for them. I mean, a fucking troll needling, you know.
That's a good businessman. I'm actually trying to get instinct. I'm trying to get Michael Cohen in our podcast soon. So
I know people who know him, but he works on CNN now. We know tons of people who know him.
Yeah. Well, this was awesome. So yeah, maybe then you'll get in touch with him and get him. Do you guys want to share any information, anything coming up? No, hold on. After, I want to ask you something.
Okay.
So guys, anything you want to add or share, Boris, or happening?
At the Boris K Wednesday night in Rutherford, New Jersey, at the Williams Center. I'm doing a show that Hatem's producing that JL did apparently recently as well. Should be a good time. And I got a new podcast called Airbnb Drama. It's me and another comic who work with Airbnbs. We got some good stuff going on. And we do. That's true.
Yeah.
We're both balding with beards.
JL?
Thank you. Thanks for having me, by the way. So when does this go up? Sorry.
It will go up on Tuesday.
Oh, perfect. Saturday, April 1st, April Fool's Day. I'm recording a special at the Triad Theater in New York City, 9:30 p.m. Tickets for that and all my social media links and blog, podcasts, etc. are at jlcomedy.com. So just go there if you want to follow me somewhere.
Excellent. So we'll see you Wednesday. If you're coming for the show, it's going to be awesome. And also, big excitement news, the Seller Talks is going to be on YouTube next week, starting with Clint Watts. I'll send you the link. You remember the Seller Talks? Yeah, it's going to be and it's going to be big because this one is for we're releasing specifically that day. We waited for International Autistic Days, Autism Day, April 2nd. And it's going to be actually all over the news as well. I'll let you know. But the Seller Talks on YouTube, you're going to watch. It's going to be great. All right, guys. Thank you very much. It was awesome seeing you all.